Our friend Tom Gimbel, the job expert, the founder of LaSalle Network, is on the line. Welcome back, Tom.
Always good to be with you, John Williams.
A reporter called Aki Ito joined us last week. She was talking about why more and more people are deciding, from businessinsider.com, not to climb the corporate ladder. They don't think the trade is worth it. The opening paragraph was about a guy who was offered a 10% raise, more responsibility, but a better job, but he would also have to come into the office. Either way, he just thought, I'll take less money and have my lifestyle the way it is. We got a flood of people who were sympathetic to that. What's your reaction to that story, Tom?
Well, I'm sympathetic to it. I think that there's a lot of people that want to have a different lifestyle. And I give kudos to anybody that realizes that in order to have it, you have to sacrifice income. What we went through for a few years was people who wanted to have their lifestyle and didn't want to give up their income. And that's just crazy talk to me. And now what we're going to have is, you know, if there's one thing we should do is learn from the past. And we saw this going back in the time machine a little bit, John. But I remember in 2001, there were people that said after 9/11 that maybe they wanted to work more in nonprofit. They wanted to pay it forward. They cared more about others and society than themselves. And I saw that happen. I saw people quit corporate jobs and go to work for philanthropies and things like that. And that lasted for a couple years, if that. And then people shift back. And then the Great Recession, same thing, shift back. Pandemic, shift back. And so I think we saw it with gig workers 5 years ago, shift back. And so there's always going to be a segment of the population that says, I want to have more control of my life, or I want to have a better quality of life. But at the end of the day, to quote all the politicians, the cost of eggs, it doesn't seem to be going down. And in order to do that and to have a 401k and retirement savings, corporate life isn't a bad option.
Yeah, a lot of people commented on that now that you mention it. Okay, fine. So you'll take less money, less responsibility, maybe less retirement, but you are thinking about the price you're going to pay down the road. Some also wonder, too, what do you think about this, Tom? If you decline the option to move up the ladder at work, does that jeopardize the position you have? Because in theory, you're doing such a good job here, we want to promote you. No, I just want to do what I'm doing. I wonder if that kind of boomerangs around on that good employee who doesn't take the raise.
Now, that is a great conversation, John. And I believe that that's the true telltale sign of a great company, is one that accepts somebody for the role they want to be in. And if that employee isn't saying, just pay me oodles more to do the same job, but I like what I'm doing, I'm good at what I'm doing, let me do what I'm doing, good for them. Good for them for acknowledging it, for feeling comfortable, for not wanting to take on something that they feel they could fail at, or it would fail in their life to take that on. And a great company is going to say, we value you, and we value that you're honest with us enough for that. And so I really believe that if a company doesn't and they push you to take a job that you don't want, shame on them. And I also think on the flip side that there's a lot of employees that want jobs just for the money, and that's a bad thing too. And a company has to be strong enough to say, we don't think you're ready, we don't think you have the skill set, let's figure out another way to help you make money.
You may have seen this also on an HR website. They talked about how you retain people, why they not only don't want to move up the ladder, but maybe why they decide they don't want to work there anymore. And it's not just money. There are other things like the environment and so forth. How do you incentivize your best employees to stay?
I think there's several things, and it really depends on the industry, right? If you're running a charity versus an investment bank, if you're running a service firm versus manufacturing, it's all different. But I think that at the end of the day, people want to feel that they're making a difference in the company. And so the connection they have is to two groups, their coworkers and management. And the biggest mistake people make is not having management stay in contact and relationships. Well, I'm in management, so I can't be friends with people. And at the end of the day, if staff, the rank and file, aren't feeling any connection at all with their leadership, that's a big, big mistake, and it's easier for them to get them to leave, because guess who interviews those people at the other company? Management and leadership. And whether they're going to stay in contact with them or not is irrelevant, because the employee is feeling wanted by that group at the other company. And so we used to use the phrase all the time is re-recruit. When management and leadership have great talent, they need to make sure that they're re-recruiting them with the same effort and vigor that they recruited them in the beginning.
That's an interesting concept. Tom Gimbel, job expert, founder of LaSalle Network. Nice to talk to you, Tom.
Hey, John, I'm not sure if you heard the New York Jets fired their general manager. I don't know if that's in the air come Thanksgiving, but things could be changing.
You think that's a sign of things to come? I'll ask you the NewsClick question we had on our website. After the Bears lost to the Packers, would you say the glass is half empty for the Bears or the glass is half full based on what you saw Sunday?
Half. Until they make the change at head coach, it's half empty.
That's Tom Gimbel. Thank you, Tom.
Bear down.
Incidentally, Philip Weiss joins us now, the president of SciFarth at Work. And Philip, I just wanted to start by reading a couple of text messages we got based on the last conversation I had with Tom Gimbel, and really on the one that you and I are about to have. You ready?
Yep, for sure.
We talked to Tom about people who don't want to climb the corporate ladder anymore and how do you keep good employees. 630 said, I stepped down from a management position and about a $20,000 pay cut, and guess what? We couldn't be happier. John, I made those trade-offs to work up the corporate ladder. Many of my employees were not willing to make the trade-offs, but I went up. It didn't stop them, though, from complaining later on that they weren't making enough money or treated fairly, and that's the issue. And one more, 630 says, I loved my company. Great perks, supportive culture. They paid well, but they worked us to the bone, and I had to leave that job and find one with a better balance for my health. Yeah, that's not why we called on you today, but just comment on that, Philip. I'll bet you hear about those stories all the time.
Yeah, those are actually three really great illustrations of the situations and reactions that we also see when we survey employees and leaders who've made that decision and therefore ended up at the top end of the ladder. And what's fascinating about that third comment is when the environment is one that really kind of works people to the bone, the key is to leave early. It's not even a question of whether you're going to move up, because by the time you do, you can be burned out. But beyond that, John, really we see two situations. One where people are really willing to do what it takes, assuming it's not an extremely stressful prospect for them. And those people know if they devote time and energy, they will find a way to move up that ladder. The other very interesting group, Don, are people who realize if they move up too high, they'll just be an administrator.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll get to make the decisions,
sure,
but they won't get to do the interesting work. So that's a really interesting calculation for many people who are like, I love the technical aspects of my job. I don't give those up.
Speaking of hiring people, out of left field, President Trump seems to be drawing some people to populate his administration. Maybe left field isn't correct because some of these are names that we know or have maybe heard of. But the question is, are they fully qualified for that? Talk a little bit about that. What do you make of the opportunity that maybe an unexpected hire presents to a company?
Yeah, I mean, you're raising a great question, and there's no question, there's no bones about it, that President-elect Trump has sort of prided himself on saying, I'm going to break some eggs, and that includes breaking convention as well when it comes to who is being selected for some of these positions. And you're right, John, it's not as though these are totally unknown quantities. On the contrary, some are pretty high-profile individuals. What we're hearing from business leaders talking to us behind closed doors is they're raising some eyebrows around the fact that a few of the secretary level, cabinet level picks, don't have as much experience as their predecessors, be these individuals in other administrations or even Trump's own first term. Attorney general who hasn't necessarily practiced law for more than a couple of years or served as a judge. That's highly unusual. Or a defense secretary that never rose beyond the rank of major of the armed forces, nor ran any kind of larger scale defense or intelligence agency or department. Those are unusual picks in terms of, as you say, experience, in terms of management. And what CEOs and COOs are telling us is, you know what, there are times when we have to make that same choice. pick somebody who, as you say, may not be out of left field, but might be out of the box a little bit. But we think they will really kind of carry forth our vision or be innovative. But they always tell us there's a huge gamble there, because if someone is untested in a certain kind of role or environment, you don't know what's going to come out of that. So that's the discussion that we're hearing on the corporate side that mirrors these pundits talking about President-elect Trump's decision-making.
I wonder what the best way to calculate the risk-reward on that is.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really the key. So in some cases, John, companies have no choice. And what I mean by that, for example, is one of our clients, a consulting firm, there was an executive assistant who was promoted up several notches just because people above her suddenly left in rapid succession. But she had such a great customer touch. She had such great rapport. And the COO of that company said, I'm going to work with you on a daily basis to upskill you. So it was on-the-job learning with some great fundamental instincts on the part of the employee. Mm-hmm. She outperformed expectations. They had elevated her to a national sales coordination role, and she increased sales and gross revenues by 17% within a couple of years. So it's not to say you need the experience, but then you better be right on with your assumption about the person's potential and skill set.
Just a minute left, but talk about the downside. You know, by the way, I just started watching the Martha Stewart documentary. We sort of forget that she was very successful on Wall Street, and guys loved it when she came into the room, and she had a certain grace and intelligence about her. She was an out-of-the-box hire. She was the only female at the firm, and she was fantastic. But what are some of the downside risks? How and when does it go wrong?
Yeah, so that really is the bigger question, John, because a lot of executives tell us, when I have gone for someone on the basis of blind loyalty to my vision, I'm going to get a yes man or woman, and that's not going to help me. When I go for someone who's a splashy pick, that's going to often backfire. And very quickly, a COO at a food supplier company that we work with hired his brother-in-law to be his second in command. That second in command did not escalate real issues because he did not want to run counter to his brother-in-law, and things really fell apart for that company. So blind loyalty and a splashy pick at the cost of experience and skills, that can be a recipe for disaster.
I'm going to give you the phone number to Washington, D.C. It's a great big phone. It's in Washington, D.C. And when you call, you can tell them this stuff. Okay, Philip?
I'm standing by my cell phone.
Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarth at Work. John Williams here. So the Illinois Medical District on Chicago's west side houses not only big hospital spaces, but also doctor's offices and clinics. And there is a new hotel going up there, the Hampton Inn and Suites in the Chicago Medical District, not too far from the University of Illinois Chicago campus. The people that are running this new facility, Maverick Hotels and Restaurants, are helmed by Bob Habib. He is the founder of Maverick Hotels and Restaurants. So let's talk a little bit about that district and that new property over there. Bob, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
I just want to be clear on how this works. Hampton Inn and Suites has properties across the country, but you are managing this new Hampton Inn here in the city, correct?
That's correct. Hampton Inn and Suites are franchised by Hilton Hotels Corp and operated by local companies in the same way that McDonald's is. You know, when you eat at a local McDonald's, there's a strong likelihood that that restaurant is owned and operated by someone in the community.
I'm aware of that. Hadn't thought about it in terms of hotels and motels like this. So the Hampton Inn then is yours. How many properties are you managing? How many of them are you managing in Chicago?
We have 24 total hotels, including three in the city of Chicago and probably a dozen in the outlying suburbs.
This sure seems like a good bet. Just talk a little bit about that area and what you're doing over there.
The Illinois Medical District is the sleeping market in the city. We have all of that medical supply, there's the FBI headquarters, there are all those doctor's offices, all of which are generating hotel demand for people that are coming in for procedures, people that are visiting patients, and people that are coming to study or take jobs. And we think that this hotel is well situated to capitalize on all that demand.
Is this a brand new facility? Talk a little bit about the building.
It's a ground up development as part of the Gateway Development Project. Eastlake, who has developed that entire area, is the owner of the hotel and the developer. And if you have not been there, it's a brand new, so there's a food, I'll call it, court is the wrong word, but it's a little area where there are a handful of restaurants and the hotel and some residential, all as part of the development.
I see. And is it somehow unique? That is, I wonder if it'll be similar to or different from other Hampton Inns that we've all been to, considering where it is and who you're catering to.
You know, all brands evolved, and we're excited that this is going to be the first of a new generation of Hampton Inns. They've made a number of changes to the programming for that brand, and we've been able to capitalize on those and give the hotel a fresh new look. Otherwise, it will operate, you know, the thing that is a hallmark for Hampton is that people have an expectation of consistency and will deliver on that same consistency. This visit will be like visiting, you know, the Hampton Inn in Milwaukee or any other city.
Well, I understand the desire for consistency. I think when you walk into a restaurant, a hotel, a business, if there are more than one of them across the country, you may be going there because you want that free hot breakfast or the discount happy hour, which I've seen people line up for, or certain, a certain level of service. How much leeway then do you have? Are you able to add to, eliminate, tweak those sorts of programs?
You know, each hotel localizes, especially in the lobby area and with some of the decor, but the guest room product and the service expectations are strictly monitored by Hampton, and the operator is required to stick very closely to Hampton standards.
I see. You got a nice swimming pool there. Talk a little bit about that.
Indeed, we think that that swimming pool is going to drive weekend demand. People in the neighborhood attending family reunions or coming into Chicago as tourists. And it's a great place for the kids to swim while the parents take some well-needed rest and relaxation.
So the pool has, I understand, sort of floor-to-ceiling windows, and the view is of the Willis Tower. Geographically, where are we? Just situated in the city, if I'm looking at a map here.
If you were on 290 and took the Damon exit, and shortly after exiting the Eisenhower, you would see the Gateway development on your right side.
Got it. I wonder if that's close enough on the Eisenhower to the United Center, or for that matter, McCormick Place. I wonder if you'll be able to feed off of that as well.
Absolutely, especially the United Center. There aren't a lot of hotels in the immediate area of the United Center. So we would be one of the closest hotels to the United Center. Unfortunately, we didn't get open in time for the DNC, but we probably would have been one of the prime hotels for the DNC, for example.
It's interesting what happened with the DNC in the city. I was talking to one of the managers at Smith & Wolinski downtown, which is kind of a nice high-end place right on the river, great location, and the place that, you know, corporations or corporate people would come to if they were at a convention in the city. They had no business. They had no DNC business. They said it was all at the hotels, that the conventioners didn't do the city. They did the convention, and then they went back to the hotel and ate and drank.
Absolutely, and I think that's the custom. I will say if you look back at the DNC and the wins and losses, we operate Sable on Navy Pier, another one of my company's hotels, and we enjoyed a booking every night at our offshore rooftop. We enjoyed a full hotel. The convention itself was self-contained. The people that were in attendance were on the convention floor all night long, didn't leave a lot of time for outside events. And when there was chance to leave the convention floor. They were generally going to some sponsored events.
Yeah, right.
Which is, you know, so the freestanding restaurants really didn't benefit at all from extra people that were in town from the convention, or at least didn't benefit in large measure.
Sable Hotel on Navy Pier, you run that too, huh?
We do, yes.
Well, isn't that fun?
It is indeed.
That's just like, I think, it's not a sleeping giant because it's been around for a while and it's not exactly sleeping, but I don't know if people think of that when they think of a nice venue in the city. I will put that on the list because that's a really nice property you have there.
Thank you. Yeah, we're rather proud of it. And I will say that it's nice to see the Chicago market fully recovered from COVID. We recovered slower than a lot of other major markets. And this past year, with everything that happened in the city to create excitement and tourism, like NASCAR and the DNC, and of course, Lollapalooza, and yeah, so on and so forth, it was a good year to be in the hotel business in the city.
Bob Habib is the founder of Maverick Hotels and Restaurants. MaverickHotelsAndRestaurants.com is the website. And the New Hampton Inn and Suites serving that medical district is at 710 South Seeley. Good luck to you and congratulations, Bob. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The chef behind Chicago's Italian-Croatian eatery, Rosemary, is planning a new restaurant in the Fulton Market District. Chef Joe Flam and restaurant company Day Off Group have selected space in Flora Tower, the new apartment building at Carroll Avenue and May Street. Cranes reports there's no name or concept yet, but the restaurant will utilize about 5,100 square feet in the ground floor retail space of the building. Opening is set for next year. BLVD Steakhouse and Il Carciofo are the team's other restaurants. Chicago Steakhouse Maple and Ash is planning a national expansion. The restaurant owners are planning to open a new location in Miami early next year, and Cranes reports they're also considering three other new cities. Maple Hospitality Group is eyeing Santa Barbara, Boston, and New York City. It's unclear whether the new locations will have the Maple and Ash name. There's also no timeline for development. In addition to Chicago, the restaurant group has a location in Scottsdale, Arizona, and also runs a restaurant in Dallas. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And it was just a couple of weeks ago a new president was elected, and we will hear from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Is it okay to play that song for the new president of the FFA?
I don't know about that.
Well, he is the newly elected president of the National FFA, one of only seven from Illinois over the last nearly 100 years of the FFA.
Yep, I'm Thad Bergschneider. I'm currently the National FFA president.
That name has a lot of letters in it. How long did it take you to learn how to spell your name, Thad?
Steve, it's not only the Bergschneider problem, it's the Thaddeus problem. Thaddeus Bergschneider, I mean, I was probably a third grader before I was putting it down on paper confidently, you know?
But he loves to learn, which is what he's doing at the U of I.
Yeah, so I'm currently getting a degree in finance and agribusiness. Well, that's my concentration, at least, within agricultural and consumer economics. I'm not 100% certain what job or what occupation I'm going to find myself in, but what I do know is I am really curious about agriculture, business, and I love learning about other people, and we'll see where I do end up.
He's an Illinois farm boy.
Yeah, so I'm from a farm in central Illinois, Morgan County, Franklin, Illinois, to be specific, where my family raises corn, soybeans, and cattle.
The next year as president, and it's only a one-year term, will be busy for Thad, spreading the good word about the FFA.
The three tenets of FFA in our mission statement, we're talking about personal growth, career success, and premier leadership. And those three tenets can be applied anywhere in your life, and particularly within the industry of agriculture, the original occupation for all humans, because it feeds us, it fuels us, and it clothes us. And within that industry, we need students, we need professionals with every single skill set you can imagine. whatever interest you have, whatever you're skilled at, you can apply that to the industry of agriculture. And FFA gives you that base knowledge and those career-ready skills. So if you haven't thought about joining FFA or even supporting FFA, get involved because you really never know where it'll take you.
Mr. President, Thad Bergschneider. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Lucy Brennan is here, the director of Tech Rise. We've talked about this before. Welcome back. I'm glad you could join us, Lucy. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Tech Rise by P33. Okay, quick. What is Tech Rise by P33?
Yes, thank you. Tech Rise is an initiative, yes, by the civic organization P33 that supports early stage entrepreneurs from historically overlooked or undercapitalized backgrounds building across Chicagoland.
So you had a contest of sorts. Talk about that.
Yes. So we actually run our program very similar to Shark Tank, if you're familiar. So annually, we'll host about 30 pitch competitions. These are typically streamed live on YouTube. We invite five entrepreneurs to pitch to a panel of venture capital investors, and then we award $25,000 weekly. And on Thursday of this week, we have our big season finale event.
So the finalists are, among others, True Fiction, spelled TrueFiction, by, it looks like, Stephanie Manuel. Talk about that.
Yes. So Stefan Manuel is the founder of True Fiction, which is a very cool ed tech platform that supports students in class education by providing historical fiction comics, curriculum, and then a variety of professional development opportunities as well.
What a good idea, teaching history in a mode that the kids enjoy or appreciate. Talk about ASL Aspire.
Great, yes. ASL Aspire, similarly, is within the education space. However, ASL is an online platform that uses games to teach STEM education to deaf and hard of hearing students.
Arch Pet Food, what's this?
Arch Pet Food is a very cool company. It is a pet consumables company that makes everything from dog treats to pet food made out of foods like crickets and invasive carp species. So it's both sustainable as well as healthy for animals.
That's a good idea. I mean, because even people might be a little squeamish about it, knowing full well I've had crickets before. Truly, I have, and they can be made tasty, and you can hide the fact that they aren't croutons, and it's a win-win for everybody. But humans might balk at that. What does your dog know? Let's feed it to the dog if it's good for the dog.
Exactly, and even better, he got the idea for the company because during the pandemic he was fostering dogs, and he was fostering a dog that had a poultry allergy and was having a lot of trouble finding a food source for this dog with these specific allergies, and that's where the idea for the business came about.
So who are these people that are coming up with these business ideas?
Yes, phenomenal question. They are folks from all, again, across Chicagoland, from a variety of professions, but who have, you know, been launching these startups over the past few years. And so throughout our regular season of competitions, every week we elect a winner as well as a runner-up. And then at the end of the year, all of the winners and runner-ups from the regular season participate in the People's Choice voting process for the chance to be one of the six selected to pitch on Thursday evening on stage for a $100,000 prize.
And the People's Choice, do we vote online? Do we go in person? How do we participate?
Yes. So in order to submit a vote for the People's Choice winner this year, you do have to join us at the venue at the events on Thursday evening, but it is very much open to the public. We would love to welcome anyone interested in, you know, again, experiencing kind of a local Shark Tank live to join us Thursday evening.
Thursday evening, the when and the where on that, where do we go?
Yes, the event is at Morgan Manufacturing in the West Loop. It's at the corner of Morgan and Kinsey Streets. And the event, our doors will open at 4:30 p.m. and then the competition starts live on stage at 6 p.m. And folks can grab tickets at techrise.co.
.co. Okay, Lucy, let's connect next week afterwards and announce the winner. You will have already done so, but let's catch up on that later on.
Okay, I so look forward to it. Thank you so much.